Hello, welcome to Truth News Radio Australia. It's Monday, the 25th of January, 2010, believe it or not. And I'm your host, Herewood Fenton, and we have an incredible show prepared for you tonight. Massive amounts of information coming through, really important news stories, really important interviews coming up. It's taking a huge amount of mental energy and control and focus for me to actually even be able to do this at the moment, because there's so much things I have to coordinate. So if I fail, it's, you know, with the best of intentions, and I apologize, but I'm just basically taking off with this show like a guided missile. And I'd like to welcome Josh Jackson back to the show. Josh, are you there?
The info guided missile.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's an operation to just try and launch, these missives, these telecommunications.
Info files.
Yeah, it takes military precision, and we are in a battle, but it's not about wanting to destroy. It's really about wanting to create.
Yeah,
just to put a different spin on it.
Create mindfulness in people. Create passion in people. Because
yes,
that's what I think is lacking generally when I, question people, when I talk to people, when I get questioned. You know, I really see a lack of passion. I think that's what we're creating here is, with this show, definitely. I mean, some of the emails we get, some of the messages that are left on the Skype phone, they're very passionate.
It's really interesting you should mention that about passion today, Josh, because I was actually thinking exactly the same thing this afternoon.
Mm.
And there's a synchronicity there. And I was thinking about the word passion and how important it is, and how quite often I've been told in my life, and more, you know, these days, that, gee, you know, you're really intense. And
yeah,
and people often say it with a kind of a slightly condescending tone,
mm,
as if to say, you know, it's like you've got a bit of a problem there, boy, you know. And,
no, that's right. if you're not, you know, it's interesting. I notice the same thing on Facebook. If I put some mundane thing up there, you know, some thing on status update, just some mundane thing like, the sun is shining and, something like that, I'll get heaps of comments. If I put something political, no one
yeah,
says anything.
Yeah.
Maybe one person or a few people that are, we'll go, I like this. But, you know, it's funny, isn't it? When you're passionate, it's not passionate, it's intense, you're intense, and it's just too negative. But we're not negative. I mean, I don't find myself day-to-day negative. I mean, we do broach some negative subjects. I mean, you know, the downfall of our freedoms is a negative subject. But
well, we have to. I mean, when Churchill was trying to save European democracy against, the Hun, against the Nazis, he had to be a bit negative there too. I mean, you know, basically, not to compare us to Winston Churchill, but I'm just saying that, you know, there are times when you have to basically rally and alert people to things that are, you know, not that pleasant. And
oh, yeah,
boy, we got so much of it, you know. But you know, every now and then we do have a chance to actually get onto some positive stuff, and we're gonna keep doing that. I think I said in the last episode that we're gonna be doing a show on permaculture soon.
Mm. Mm.
So
awesome! I'm looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, and we're gonna get back to the free energy topic, which I think is incredibly important and incredibly positive. And
yeah, I think that's they're free energy. I mean, that is really one of the biggest, most important, because that energy is what the whole New World Order is based its financial structure on and its power bet on, is control of energy.
Correct.
And I really believe that. So we'll, as soon as that's broken down, as soon as we can get, I mean, that's where the open source energy movement, by breaking down these ridiculous notions of patenting and stuff like that. As soon as we look at open source software and how successful that is at bringing down huge conglomerates. I mean, Look at Microsoft being brought down by, you know, I mean, the main server is used by, you know, Linux. Most big servers are Linux servers, you know. I mean,
our guest for tonight, who's coming up in about 15 minutes, is going to engage us in some of those topics. So, hold your breath for that one, because we're going to get into some of these questions about open source.
So tonight on the show, we are going to interview the head of the Pirate Party.
Yeah, the president. The president of the Australian Pirate Party. He's joining us from Melbourne.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm really looking forward to that, because that is one of the most important political parties to come into Australian politics in a long, long time, because they are very broad. It's not just, you know, people think, oh, it's just to do with, you know, Pirate Bay or something like that, but it's not. It's a lot more than that. And I was in Germany at the time when the Pirate Party got massive amounts of votes over there.
Great.
And so I was watching that very clearly. In fact, I managed to get my father and my brother to vote for them, and they were very disillusioned with both sides. And traditionally, my dad's a bit of a conservative, and he went with the Pirate Party. So that was quite interesting.
Well, this is something we're going to get into shortly, and I want to. A lot of our listeners don't understand who the Pirate Party is, and people may be confused about this. We'll get into it and we'll explain it, and we'll lead you by the hand step by step. Okay, so bear with us. I've got a few breaking news stories I need to cover just before we get into that. So just stand by. Okay. There's some breaking stories which we have on our Twitter feed at the moment, and I'm just going to run through some headlines, because I really part of our job on this show is to actually keep you up to date with a variety of news stories, and we try to do these interviews as well, which get into a lot of depth, but I don't like it, you know, when we miss out on covering all of the news. So, you know, I'd like to do two shows a week, one where we focus on an interview, one where we just go through all the news stories. That would probably be where I'm heading to with this show. But for now, I just want to quickly alert our listeners to a new initiative called the Great Australian Blackout. From the 25th of January to the 29th of January, Australian websites will turn their lights out to inform Australians about the threat of internet censorship. Now, basically, this is a group protest. This is an organised protest that's actually being led by the Electronic Frontiers Australia organisation.
Yeah, and great organisation, folks, and please support
them.
Yes,
it is. And they've actually created a dedicated website for this new protest, which is www.internetblackout.com.au. And if you go there, you'll see the Great Australian Internet Blackout. What's the problem? The federal government is pushing forward with a plan to force internet service providers to censor the internet for all Australians. This plan will waste millions of dollars and won't make anyone safer. Now, there's a variety of things that are recommended here that you can do. Contact your MP, black out your online profile picture, change your profile picture now to spread the word and encourage your friends to join the blackout. Over 1,500 Twitter users are participating already, and there's a link there to explain how to do that. Then black out your website during blackout week. For 1 week, you will black out your website, and they give you an excellent little snippet of JavaScript. All you've got to do is copy that and put it into the body tag of your website. Mm. And what it will do is it puts this great pop-up onto your screen, a JavaScript kind of lightbox thing that basically just dims the background. And people can easily click through it and get rid of it. But basically, it'll take you 10 seconds to do it. And it means that you'll be promoting this protest. So anyone who's got a website or a blog, go to the info page. Go to our Twitter feed or go to EFA and get some details on that, because we need to work together on this. It's an excellent initiative. I'm really, really pleased with it. Mm. Next top story of tonight. The headline I've put on the Twitter feed here: Bin Laden takes credit for the underpants bomber, threatens more attacks using white females. Now, this is really so extraordinarily ridiculous.
Yeah.
That I think we just have to. I mean, look, it's worth a chuckle, actually, because it's so absurd. But at the same time, we know that it's real. I mean, we know that the people who are staging this as a propaganda theme are very serious in what they they're doing, and it's we have to continually remind ourselves of it, that this is false, this is false flag, this is PSYOP, this is a created threat.
To me, Harold, it almost seems good that they're doing it. I mean, it's just because it's so transparent. I mean, most people you ask on the street, if you say, "Oh, do you think Bin Laden's dead?" They say, "Oh, yeah, he died years ago." I mean, it's common knowledge that he's just not around anymore. And then to put out this rubbish, this absolute rubbish, it's like saying, the moon is actually gone on holiday for a week. Right?
Yeah,
like, it's so absurd that no one, what are you going to do,
It has no basis in.
It
has no basis in empirical reality. Only it is used as a backdrop so that they can keep the pressure up, so that they can keep the pressure on need for no fly lists and more draconian measures. People are being stopped from getting on planes at Heathrow Airport now. They've already started the no fly list in the UK, and people are being prevented from getting on planes. They have a ticket and everything, and they go to board. And some insane bureaucrat says, "No, you can't get on this plane. This is already happening." And there's no, but they're not charged with anything. There's no.
I wonder what will happen if someone runs out of their visa and they're on a no-fly list for some pathetic reason.
Well, then they'll get the full force of the law for running out of their visa, and then they'll be treated as a terrorist. That's probably what will happen.
Yeah, but they won't be able to bring them home.
Right. I see what you mean.
You can't fly you back to Australia.
Well, no, you're quite right, actually. That will happen. A few other top stories here. David Kelly, the murdered, or people officially suicide, but many people, including many doctors, believe that he was murdered. He was a weapons inspector, and he died in 2003 under very, very murky circumstances.
Mm.
And it's now been announced that the post-mortem data will be kept secret for 70 years.
What?
70 years. 70 years. If that is not an admission of guilt on the part of the government and the authorities, what more can you expect? They know there's something in there that we can't be allowed to see.
Mm-hmm.
This has never happened before. If you go to the article, which is on Twitter, this has never happened before. I think they're panicking. I think there is actually, we are getting very close to a breakthrough here where some of these people could end up going to prison. I'm talking about high-level people. I'm talking about Tony Blair. I'm talking about Lord Hutton. I'm talking about Gordon Brown. I mean, I'm talking about the top people here, because they were all implicated. And I think that's why they're taking such extreme measures.
No, that's right. But the thing is, meantime, this sort of information comes out. Meantime, we've got stories about, Serena Williams's underpants. Honestly, it's we're getting close. And the whole mainstream media, I'm trying to stop calling them mainstream. The whole commercial media industry is really ignoring stuff more and more. The corporate media. I mean, this is just insanity. It's insanity. We're seeing something so extreme, and no reporters covering it, apart from a few, really dedicated reporters, which and people like ourselves, independent journalists. So, that's why, again, turn off your TVs and spread podcasts like these and our Twitter feed around,
Indeed. Now, just quickly running on to the next story here, which is related to my upcoming interview tomorrow. The IPCC chief has admitted that there has been fraud in relation to Himalayan glaciers. And this is a fraud that was basically perpetrated through the IPCC. So completely fraudulent information about climate change was put into the IPCC report, which has now admitted that is incorrect. There's a huge follow-through of this.
Yeah, it was sort of extrapolated from some half-wit journo talking about it on some show.
Indeed, yeah.
And then the IPCC took that as fact and said it as scientific fact and just decided to publish it in their findings, which then gets parroted and moved on and overexposed because most media, big corporate media outlets have got dedicated people dedicated to basically climate change. They have to report on things to do with climate. That's their job. And so you have this whole industry, and when they get a press release from the IPCC saying stuff like this, of course it just becomes fact because everyone's reporting it. So you see it on Channel 10, you see it on Channel 9, you see it on Channel 7, you see it on the ABC especially, you see it everywhere. So, oh, it has to be true, you know, because I've seen it in multiple places, I've seen it in multiple sources. But what happens? It comes from one source. It comes from the IPCC, and that source gets it from some dodgy... So, you know... Things, because they are in multiple places, are not always fact,
Indeed.
And that's what we try to do is get past the spin and deception. And, you know, a lot of the time there is facts, but it's these sort of half-truths that are really difficult to get to break through, you know.
Now, I'll be getting back into some of these issues tomorrow because I'm doing another show tomorrow with a huge guest. And,
huge guest, folks. I mean, this we are getting some of the biggest guests on this show now. And please tell all your friends. We're having a massive, massive show that's getting recorded tomorrow. It'll probably be on the wire in the next couple of days after that. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the two shows, I mean, the show we're doing tonight and the show we're doing tomorrow will probably follow each other pretty closely. So probably by the time this one is up, the other one will be up roughly at the same time.
Spread the link on your Facebook. You know, we really, really encourage everyone to do that because... you know, we're putting our time and effort and money into this show, especially you, Harold.
Indeed.
Mainly you. Really, to get some of the best guests in the world on, and we're upping the ante this year. So, folks, support us by the least you can do is support us in spreading the show around.
Indeed. Look, we're going to break now because we're bringing our guest on. So please stand by, and we'll return momentarily. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, welcome back to Truth News. Today, it's my great pleasure to welcome to the show... David Crafty, who's the president of the Australian Pirate Party. Now, this may be new territory for some of our listeners. We haven't covered the Pirate Party before. And I'll just quickly summarise from my point of view, and, you know, I might be corrected at some point, but as I understand it, the Pirate Party is concerned with internet freedom and changing the way in which we understand and apply copyright in some cases. And one of the main concerns of the Pirate Party is changing the concept of copying or file transfer from the idea of it being theft to a different way of understanding it, because the application of sort of outdated concepts and outdated sort of morality and law to things like copying files, which is really just a free technological capability, it's just not up to speed with where we're at with modern technology and modern society. And so... at this point, I just really like to welcome the president of the Australian Pirate Party, David Crafty, to the show. David, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, that was a fairly rough introduction there. Perhaps you'd like to expand on that and, you know, just from whatever the most concise and, you know, convenient way you can think of.
Okay, well, basically, we're a civil liberties-oriented party, and in our modern world, a lot of that focus is directed at the internet because that's where we conduct so much of our lives.
Excellent. So you're a civil liberties-oriented party, and by civil liberties, you're concerned about freedom in a number of senses. And maybe we could just go through that, because at the moment, I mean, there's two main issues which are quite prominent in the news at the moment, of course. One being the internet censorship, which our government intends to bring in, and the other being issues around... controlling of what people can do online. And like, we've got a couple of stories up on our Twitter feed at Truth News from Europe, and one is they're both quite shocking, actually. One of them is that Italy is about to oppose draconian new internet censorship measures that are going to require videos to be basically pre-approved before they can be uploaded, and another from France, where they're planning to bring in a very, very harsh law called the Hadopi law, which will basically cut people off from the internet if they download illegally more than three times. And I just wonder, David, do you have a lot of contact or relationship with the European pirate parties?
We do communicate. Sorry, there's quite a bit of feedback there.
Oh, sorry about that.
We do communicate with the Pirate Party international body through mailing lists and various mechanisms like forums and chat rooms and stuff like that. And we try to conduct some campaigns together. However, obviously, Australia is somewhat left out of the European parties. They are somewhat left out of the European parties' campaigns because there's just a big difference in time zone, and even the system of government is. Yeah, sorry, I'm bumbling a bit, but
no, no, you're fine. You're fine. Thanks.
So is that feedback really bad that it's causing you?
It was throwing me a bit, yeah. It stopped, but yeah, it kind of threw me, and then I didn't really recover too well.
Oh, okay.
No worries.
Now, for the folks that don't know, that while we're talking about the Europe side of the Pirate Party, it originated in Sweden. Is that right?
Yeah, it originated in Sweden in about 2006 as a response, but not directly connected to the raid on the Pirate Bay at the time. And since then, they've managed to get 7% of the vote in the European elections, and they have 2 members of the European Parliament, and they're the third biggest party in the country.
I mean, that's just, folks, that's just stunning, and that makes me so happy, because I was lucky enough to be in Berlin when the German elections were on, like I said in the beginning of the show, and really it was amazing seeing all the posters around everywhere for the Pirate Party. They'd really put in a lot of time and effort and money into promoting them. They got quite a good vote turnout for a third party, but didn't quite make it. But for the amount of numbers that they got, everyone was blown away. So I think Australia will if we really put some effort in behind the campaigns to get some numbers, at least some sort of representation, it's really important. Now,
look, one of the, well, just before we get too far into the promoting what you guys are doing, I have to play a devil's advocate role here, because basically I'm quite supportive of the Pirate Party. However, many people I talk to, even many of the people who are activists in areas related to freedom, are completely don't really understand it. And here's one of the questions that often comes up, and I'm hoping you can basically allay the concerns that a lot of people have when they say, for example, well, I mean, I was explaining this to someone yesterday, and I was saying, downloading a file, copying a file shouldn't be considered as theft, because it's not theft. You basically aren't taking something away from another person. You're merely making an exact duplicate. But then people always come back with the argument, which obviously has been put to them by record companies and a lot of promotion and what you get on a video when you put a DVD and the big warnings about software piracy is like shoplifting, et cetera, et cetera. The idea that people have is that, no, you're depriving someone else of future income. In other words, by you copying a file, whether it's a DVD or an MP3 or even a piece of software, you're depriving some other individual or organization of future income, therefore it's bad. So let's respond to that initially. How do we deal with that concern?
Well, to start with, you're right that the Crimes Act defines theft as an act that permanently deprives someone of something. But I know that that's not a satisfactory answer for most people. The way we look at it is that the original purpose of copyright wasn't to make people so rich off having a music track or two that they can appear on Cribs. The purpose of copyright is that society gives up certain freedoms to be able to copy, which they can do in a natural world. There's nothing to stop them. So we allow laws to be put in place that do allow us, that do stop us from copying in certain instances, in order to promote innovation and creativity so that we can all benefit by increasing our culture. That's the actual reason for it, and that's what's been corrupted over the decades. So the way Pirate Party Australia sees it, and all the other pirate parties tend to agree, is that if encouragement isn't needed for creativity, then we shouldn't be offering it. Which sounds a bit strange, but if you think about it, Avatar has been downloaded over 1 million times, apparently, according to some figures, but it still pulled in over $1 billion. So what, you know, what's the need for extremely strict copyright laws when people can still make stuff and they can still make a profit off it without those laws?
Precisely. And what I'd also like to say, because, you know, my whole family are musicians and artists. And, you know, when I was talking to my father-in-law, who is basically a sound engineer, and my mother's a musician, and he creates albums and stuff. And I said, oh, look, you can find, you know, albums for things here and remix them and blah, blah, blah. And he was quite upset because it's like, oh, you're stealing and this and that. And I said, well, hang on, it's ridiculous. The only people seeding massive amounts of torrents are ones that are making vast amounts of profits, say, from the top 10 singles. If you look for some obscure thing like My Mum, there's just no one will be sharing it at all. And so people like My Mum are making good money without the record labels, because the free market has developed new ways, like through the iTunes store and stuff like that. If you can get a barcode, you can sell on there. So there is definite ways around it. And I really don't buy this whole thing of that you're depriving someone from, you know, making profits. And I don't know if you, I haven't seen the latest figures, but I saw the figures a couple of years ago that the content companies, like the record companies, even after Napster, were making record profits. I mean, and this was before iTunes, and now iTunes is out. You know, I mean, I'm sure that hasn't gone down.
Well, it's also been thoroughly disproven that a copy made is a lost sale. If 1 million copies are made, how many lost sales is that? Someone could throw out the number of 10,000, but then someone else throws out the number that there's, you know, 20,000 extra sales made because of the marketing. No one really knows the statistics all that accurately, though from what does get released from time to time, like some figures yesterday, it actually shows that people who do tend to download actually purchase more digital content than people who don't.
I'd just like to propose an analogy to you guys, and just a thought experiment, because I was thinking about this yesterday and I was trying to think of a really good analogy. Imagine if we developed a new technology using, say, nanotechnology, and this could easily happen, right, where we could basically take a bar of gold and duplicate it so that it was actually a molecularly real gold. So we take one bar of gold, we duplicate it, and we create another bar of gold. Now, if that technology could be developed and worked, the value of gold would just drop, like, through the floor so quickly. And a lot of people would be deprived of future revenue by that, if it was really the ability to do that. But could that be, you know, imagine that would happen. Is that going to be considered theft too? Because, you know, as technology develops, and especially as nanotechnology develops, the ability to make exact duplicates of things is just going to become better and better and better. What are we going to, you know, do about this concept that we have about
see, property? This is the crazy thing, is that when photocopiers first got invented, you know, there's this notion of disruptive technologies. And when a photocopier first got developed, you know, there was literally, you know, millions of students around the world unemployed all of a sudden, because they would have these, you know, part-time jobs just copying documents on typewriters for people. They'd have large warehouses where you could get something duplicated 1,000 times through you know, people typing stuff out. And all of a sudden, you had this photocopier by Xerox come out. Boom! That whole industry wiped. You know, that is the evolution of technology. It is just part and parcel of technology. And to put restrictions, and actually what you said there, Herod, reminds me of this comedian that I saw that said, I think I've already said this on the show, it's like, you know, at the start of these DVDs, they say, you wouldn't steal a car, you wouldn't, you know, steal someone's handbag.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, no, I wouldn't. But if someone said to me, hey, I've got this brand new car, check it out, like, it's really nice, isn't it? And if they said to me, hey, you want a copy of it? I'd say, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean... Do you want me to burn you a copy? Anyway,
Anyway, back to David. David, where do you stand on these sort of fundamental issues? I mean, I guess that's
well, in the copying of the gold scenario.
Yeah.
It would be such a disruptive technology that it would just have to be dealt with by the shifting of business models. There's no other way around it.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing now, and governments are trying to implement regimes that are extremely oppressive, and it's all just to prevent the death of some business models that are inevitably going to die. And so it's one of the main reasons that we're opposed to copyright infringement legislation that we're seeing today, other than the obvious issues with just the dying business models not being sustainable, is that the kind of legislation required in order to enforce that, the kind of enforcement tactics required to keep those business models alive is just anathema to a free society.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And this goes back to the questions of freedom and basic, you know, concepts of democracy, which is what we talk about on this show all the time, and we're always coming at it from different angles. And basically the corporate kind of predatory behavior of corporate government partnerships that restrict people's behavior so that, you know, you're basically breaking the law all the time, no matter what you do. And, you know, this bleeds into a lot of different areas. I mean, just to give you an example, you know, speed limits now have been changed all over the New South Wales, where they've put in these 40-kilometre-an-hour speed limits around schools. And what this actually means is that, and the speed limit only applies for 1.5 hours out of the day. So you, as a driver, have to suddenly be aware that the speed limit, which is normally 60, goes down to 40, and then they police that, and people are getting booked constantly. I know a friend who got booked 3 times. But it's just this kind of, well, we've decided that's illegal now. That's a, you know, it's a crime, and, oh, boy, you're going to get caught. And so we're just getting caught in all these traps, you know. And I do feel that, that you know, using BitTorrent and, you know, just doing these basic things that are obviously there's no crime there. It's being turned into a crime. And we need to stand up again for what we, the people, believe to be our rights. You know, it's not up to the corporations to tell us what our rights are. So, you know, I really respect what you guys are doing. And I just hope for our listeners' benefit that you can, you know, if you're listening to this and you've never heard of the Pirate Party before and it sounds a little scary or a little bit, you know, sort of surreal, it's not. It's very serious. And you've got an excellent website with a great FAQ on it. And
One thing I'd like to just ask you is the one thing that I kept on getting when I was trying to convince people to vote for the Pirate Party in Germany was the one thing that kept on coming up was, hey, well, they're a one trick pony. They're only you know, worried about that. And I, you know, how do you refute that?
Well, that's why I like to focus on a broader civil rights platform, where that can be broken up into several different rights that other parties just aren't particularly interested in defending, such as privacy and freedom of speech and freedom of political association and issues like that. But other than copyright, there's also a policy for patent reform, and that can even be split up into some more detail related to biotech stuff and other issues.
Yeah.
And while we don't have explicit education policies, clearly we're going to be promoting more open standards and open exchanges of information, which by itself will promote better standards of education. And while we don't have an environmental policy, we're all for promoting the proliferation of green technology. So,
excellent.
Yeah, you know, we don't have a broad platform, but our narrow focus does actually branch out into more than the expected number of areas.
I'm just going to take a really quick break, guys, and just when we get back, I want to get into some of that detail that you're focused on. Just stand by there.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Okay, you're back with Truth News Radio Australia, and tonight we're interviewing David Crafty, who's the president of the Australian Pirate Party, and we've been getting into some of the philosophical issues and questions, and just want now to get into, you know, the campaigns and what the Pirate Party is actually involved in. Josh, were you about to say something there before I cut you off?
No, well, I just think the biotech stuff's quite interesting, but how you were talking about the green movement, I mean, we've interviewed some people here that are very deeply involved in the open source energy movement. Basically, a whole, you know, thousands of engineers around the world working on developing greener sources of energy to really whacked out free energy. You know, there's no such thing as free totally, but, you know, free air energy as free as possible by really dissing the patent system altogether. And some of their work that they're coming out with is absolutely astonishing. And again, using the internet for copying blueprints back up onto the net, changing them, using the open source methodology of working and collaborating. It's just awesome.
Yeah. Do you focus on open source technology and open source copyright as an important, I guess, aspect of what the Pirate Party supports?
Well, we're certainly not against it.
Right.
However, it's not an integral part of our policy strategy, though we've got many members who do support it explicitly. For example, our website's hosted with all free technologies, PHP and all Drupal for content management and lots of stuff like that. However, I'm actually a software developer myself and I use Microsoft technologies, which always feels a little bit disappointing.
Well, yeah, you have to do what you have to do to make a living these days, and you know, it varies. I mean, a lot of large organizations are using PHP and Linux to basically do everything, and some of the really commercial ones are doing that too. Look, I just want to go through, we're talking before about, you know, whether this is a single issue party. On your FAQ, it says here you're not a single issue party. It says it says here what your main policy areas are. It says decriminalization of non-commercial copyright infringement, protection of freedom of speech rights, protection of privacy rights, opposition to internet censorship, support for R18 plus rating for games, reforming the life of 70 years copyright length, and providing parents with the tools to run their own families.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good set
and
of...
And that's something that I've always said, especially when it comes to the internet filtering of Stephen Conroy, is that this notion that we need to have a nanny state telling us, you know, blocking everything and taking the responsibility, taking that sort of important responsibility away from the parent and putting it onto the government. It's so absurd. You know, parents need to look out for their own kids because no one else is going to. Governments will only use this massive infrastructure to build more power for themselves. And that's really important to understand. And I mean, historically, that's where my argument is backed up just historically.
Yeah, my main concern with implementing internet censorship isn't about what the intentions of the current government are. It's about the fact that they're building a framework that will allow future governments to do whatever they want, and they're never going to relinquish power. They'll only ever creep it forward a bit at a time until people just don't realize what it is that they've lost.
Exactly. And that's a very, very important distinguishment. You know, people say, oh, you know, they wouldn't block into, you know, they wouldn't block some subversive text about this government or whatever something that they might not like. Yeah, maybe not, but the future governments might. And this is the other thing that I say, you know, building an internet filter isn't just something you just do, isn't some cheap little thing. It's a very expensive, very technical thing to set up. And so once you've got something set up, that's set up and for future governments to use and abuse.
Yeah, just another analogy. I mean, imagine the government comes along and says, look, we're going to put an electrified barbed wire fence around your home, but, you know, guess what? We're not going to switch it on. Like, you know, and you'll be able to walk in and out. We're never going to switch it on unless a bad person comes in and then we're going to electrify them.
Well, the analogy I like to use is just imagine what Stalinist Russia would have been like if he had the technology of today.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, or the, you know, the East Germany with the Stasi, you know. I mean, it's really important that internet stays free. The whole reason the internet is the magnificent thing that it is because it's totally free and anarchic. And that is so important for us to realize that. And, you know, I mean, I've been on the net for my whole life, and I'm 32 now. And the, you know, I've been to some of the darkest corners of the web. Just, you know, you just can't help it. You surf here and there and you just get to some thing trying to search for some weird thing that you're into. And I've never come across dodgy stuff like child porn and stuff like that. I've just never just stumbled across it. You know, it's just, it might be out there, but it's not like your kid's just going to stumble across this stuff.
Well, that's exactly right. I've never known of anyone who would at least admit that they've stumbled across any kind of child porn. And it seems to me that the only kind of people who are going to be sharing child porn are people who are explicitly sharing it directly with each other, and the filter doesn't even answer the question of peer-to-peer transfers.
No, exactly. And someone who's sick enough to do that is going to find a way around anything that the government can throw at it. The main thing that the government will do, and we've discussed this on the show before, is the problem with internet filter, it starts becoming this, it's like the no-fly list. You know, you get 10 people on it, then you get 100 people on it. All of a sudden, there's a million people on the no-fly list in the States or something like that. I mean, a million names. I mean, it's absurd. And so what starts happening is there's actually more people more websites on the list than there are. I mean, you know, it's a ridiculous notion. But what happens, the internet starts becoming, you need a license to have a website. You need a license to be on the net, because so you need to get pre-screen, because it's easier just to pre-screen content that's going to go on there than to try and filter out random stuff that people are just chucking up every day. I mean, and this, again, this sounds absurd, and people say, yeah, that'll never happen, whatever. But this is how creeping happens. This is how creeping works. They build something, they build a list, all of a sudden it'll get so big and you know, this is what happens. They don't go from A to Z, they go from A to B to C to D.
The question is, I mean, what can we do? What would you recommend? I mean, what do you think, Dave, from where you're standing at the moment, what are the things that we can do and that our listeners can be doing? I notice you're promoting Electronic Frontiers Australia and the Australian Blackout Week, which we were talking about earlier before you came on. There's going to be a protest on the 6th of March. We need to educate. We need to inform. So any other ideas that you've got there?
Well, the main goal of the Pirate Party is to get our policies enforced, whether or not we're in government to do it. So I'd encourage everyone to take part in the protests coming up on March 6th and to join Pirate Party Australia just so we can at least get registered. And then we can actually start looking at contesting elections, and it's really votes at the ballot box that are going to sway the current politicians more than anything else.
Excellent, excellent.
Is there a Facebook page and a fan page they can hook up to?
There's a Facebook group for Pirate Party Australia.
Oh, great, great. I'll have to join that.
And it's Pirate Party AU on Twitter.
Great, great. Have you got a chapter in Sydney? Have you got a group in Sydney at all? Because we're actually Sydney-based.
Well, yeah, the founder of the party is actually from Sydney. That's great. Rodney Sikowski. And we do have quite a few active members in Sydney.
And do they have meetings? Like, can we, because we'll promote things here.
Yeah, sorry, there are meetings like once every month or two at this rate, I think. And they're advertised through Facebook and on our website in the lead up to them.
Now, one thing I remember during the Ron Paul elections of the States, people running up to those elections, people were just changing their profile pictures to Ron Paul's picture. And it was quite interesting because that really... gave him a massive jump. I recommend our listeners to all change your profile pics to the Australian Pirate Party emblem. I think that's a great little idea.
Well, that would be great, but actually, I've personally changed mine to the blacked out no clean feed image on Twitter and Facebook.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's a protest that we're all going to get involved in over the next week.
Yeah, that's fantastic, guys. Get amongst that. All our listeners, I recommend definitely doing that. That's a very, very good initiative, the blackout initiative.
Yeah, and we'll put that up on Truth News as well, the blackout message there that you're promoting. So, what's your membership at this point? Is it like, how's it going?
Well, we had about 1,500 preliminary members before we started taking active founding memberships. But as I'm sure you can recognize, it takes a lot to get people to convert from just having to sign up on a web form to actually having to print out something and fax it to us. So we're still at about 300 or so, but with protests coming up and university about to go back, we don't foresee any problems getting registered well before the next election.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, of course, joining a political party, there's a bit of red tape involved there, because when you join a political party, you can't be a member of any other political party.
However, you can renounce that membership in order to join.
Okay, right, you can renounce. And what sort of details do you need to provide? What's the process of actually joining a political party? Because I've never done that, I have to confess. So,
well, in this case, it's just a matter of going to our website, printing out a form, filling it in. There's a $20 founding members fee, but about half the members have actually... Well, the average donation in total is probably closer to $50. If you give at least $50, then once we get our store sorted out, we're going to send you out some swag. And that's all it really is, just fill in a form and fax it in or email it.
Fantastic. And one last question from me that I wanted to ask is about the genetic modification and patenting of that stuff. Where do you guys stand on that?
It's going to depend on the science, really. I mean, the patenting of the actual genes, we're totally against that. The kind of stuff that I've heard Monsanto's done with having one farmer accidentally contaminate another farmer's crops and then suing that other farmer and making them destroy all their seeds that they've been harvesting for 100 years or so, we don't see that as ethical. And so we also don't think that the patenting of genetic material should really be allowed. But as far as the health concerns to do with GM stuff, I'm happy to listen to the scientists about that.
Yeah, and that's where we stand on this show as well. Generally, the health is a very scientific issue, and I think on our latest Twitter feed, we're talking about organs shutting down from Monsanto corn at the moment. So yeah, that's really fantastic stuff, that is. But the main thing I'm worried about personally is the patenting of life itself and having these sort of ridiculous genetic pollution and then owning it through a ridiculously large global patent system.
Yeah, well, there's also issues to do with process patents that I'd like looked at to do with pharmaceuticals. From what I understand, while the initial patent on a drug might last 20 years, if the main manufacturer of that drug before the 20 years runs out starts manufacturing it with a different process so that the drug is released at a different rate, then generics aren't allowed to be substituted for it, which is how they effectively turn a 20-year patent into, say, a 60-year patent.
Mm. Mm. There was a great TV show on the other day. I think it was on the ABC. About copyright and the issues. Did you manage to catch that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it was very good. It was talking about how taking bits of music and remixing and where the law stands with that, with the generation of us that remix. And it went right back to Disney and how he copied a lot of his stuff from predecessors to him. But then when it came to his stuff, you know, he's got Mickey Mouse registered trademark for another, converted it from 20 years or something like that to 90 years, and now it's forever. And that, but then they sort of went on to more of the bigger sense of what that all means, and that coming down to patenting different functions of medicine. So not just little parts of a medication, not just a whole medication, but little parts of it. So I say, you know, if it was more of an open source sort of feeling around this around medicine, we would definitely have cures for cancer and all sorts, because you can mix and match different technologies together. But with these ridiculous patents, and it really stifles any sort of ingenuity, because all, you know, everything's built on the past in our lives, and that's what we're stopping.
Well, one of the things that Pirate Party definitely stands for is people being able to make money from inventions and music and stuff.
Absolutely.
We just want to reassess what kind of legislation, what kind of framework is built up to allow that. Mm. And if that means pulling away certain laws and that forces new business models to develop, then so be it. But yeah, basically we want the greatest good for mankind.
Yeah. And so you don't want to steal away intellectual property totally or take away the concept of it, but broaden it to allow people to still profit from their ideas, but not monopolize whole industries and whole ideas for forever and a day, yeah, even if they don't do anything with it.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Well, look, David, we'll probably conclude there unless there's anything more that you wanted to add. It's been really superb having you on, and we're going to continue to promote Pirate Party for sure.
All right, thanks for that. So, yeah, just to everyone out there, go to pirateparty.org.au and click the big join button.
Absolutely. Well, look, thanks very much, David, and we'll keep following your campaigns and stuff. Cheers.
All right, thanks.
Thanks a lot. That was David Crafty. He's gone, and that was a really, really excellent interview.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome stuff. So, folks, again, thepirateparty.org.au, just get amongst it. I think it's one of the most important parties that we've had in a long, long time.
Yeah, and, you know, again, it's about re-educating, because I was meeting with some people from We Are Change Sydney yesterday, and a lot of people aren't really aware of the concepts, and you know, we've all been educating ourselves, and we've all been changing our mindsets in various areas, but some people go down one path and then they're not aware of another path, and that you can always learn more and you can always expand more. And I'm the same. Like, I'm constantly redefining and changing my understandings of a lot of things. It's an ongoing evolution. That's why it's so amazing being involved in this movement that we're involved in, is because you're learning all the time. And there's a concept here which is really important. If you haven't thought about it, start thinking about it, because I know a lot of people, I've spoken to musicians here, and a lot of musicians have kind of been a little bit brainwashed, a little bit they've bought into this idea that's actually been promoted by the record companies, that you shouldn't use BitTorrent, you shouldn't download files, because it's punishing other musicians.
It's ridiculous, because all of the new generation of musicians are all using MySpace, BitTorrent, all of those for their benefit. They're using it as a marketing tool. I mean, and they're making more money. And I mean, my brother, he had a very successful band in the 90s. And he was supporting Ice-T's Body Count tour and all that with his band, and so they were very successful. And he made so little money from the album, because the record company basically just took so much, and the contract was something like, oh, you get 1 cent for every album sold after the first 100,000 sold. Then you get 1 cent per that, and there's, four band members, so you have to split that cent up. I mean, it's so little. Nowadays, a band can get on there, on the net, sell on iTunes, sell on multiple streams, not just iTunes. There's a heap of other sites as well. Sell on their local, on their actual website.
Yeah.
Give their music away for free.
Yeah.
And then the fans always want to support as well. You know, it goes on the notion of donating as well. You know, people donate to causes and stuff, and that model works. And I mean, it's it's ridiculous to think that the little artists, I mean, and we've got to redefine what actually music is. I mean, I literally 99.999% of artists are of musicians are their own independent musicians, and the 0.00001% of musicians are the ones you see on the top 40.
Yeah. And they're the ones that get seeded a lot in BitTorrent, and but of course they're not really being hurt by the downloading. So there's actually false propaganda being put forth that people have bought into, and it's really sad because I know a lot of musicians want to do the right thing. You know, they're creative people, and they've been led down the wrong path. You know, and we've got to try and reverse the propaganda. We've got to correct this. This concept that people have to understand, you know, I mean, look, the Pirate Bay and these BitTorrent repositories are just a fact. And even if Pirate Bay gets shut down, another one will appear in its place. They're always going to be with us. Yeah. So this is just a fact, right? There's always going to be a whole bunch of stuff that you can download for free. And anything that gets popular, as soon as it gets popular, it's going to be in that free thing that you can download. That's the fact. That's technology. Get over it. Don't try to criminalize it to stop it, because that's the most lame and pathetic way of trying to deal with an issue.
To deal with something with violence never works.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you just can't just use violence for everything. And that's what passing a new law is. New laws are violence. You're just passing off the violence to the police. That will then go around and try to arrest you violently, and if you oppose, you get struck down. I mean, that is what laws are all about. Why don't, you know, the thing is that corporations, I mean, the free market will come up with new ways of getting money from the internet. I mean,
and they'll make more money. Like, there'll be more opportunities this way than there ever were before. Back in the days of vinyl records, it was so limited, you know. There was just one technology. Now there's dozens of different technologies. And just amazing opportunities everywhere, you know.
I mean, one of the big things now is, you know, record companies are starting to push vinyl again. Because what will happen is, you know, no one can copy it as easily. And you can get this great, nice artwork, and the sound's really warm and analog, and it just sounds awesome. So they're really pushing the record industry is really pushing vinyl again, and is going to. I mean, that's my prediction anyway. But I think, you know, the free market always comes up, and it's the free market will absolutely try to defend its old ways because it's stuck, especially the old big people in the market, like record labels and stuff.
And they'll try to turn to government, and they'll try to say to government, you've got to protect us. You've got to pass laws to protect our business. That's basically, when you get down to it, that's what's happening. The record companies are turning to the government, the enforcement, you know, department, saying, we're not making so much money. You got to actually, you know, help us make money by threatening people.
Yeah, and then what they'll do, though, is record companies can't say to the government, oh, look, you've got to do it, and you've got to say it's to protect our profits, because that doesn't sound too good. Yeah. So what they do is they say, oh, we've got to protect the children from pedophiles.
Yeah.
And so anyone that's opposed to that is obviously a pedophile, because, you know, you're opposed to, you know, these new internet filters and things. I mean, it's all absolutely ridiculous. It all stems, well, 90% of it, because it also helps governments gain more power. But 90%
point
of it is basically just corporations wanting to protect old systems of profit. And look, I'm not against profit. Jeez, I'm a capitalist at heart. You know, everyone knows me as that. That's what I am. But what I am against is freedoms of people more than. I mean, what I am for is freedoms of people more than anything else, you know, and profits are always second to that, for sure.
Yeah, so true. And I just wanted to say two things. One is that I think that with the, you know, incredible emergence of free porn on the internet, the porn that basically used to be that you had to pay for it with a credit card, I can only imagine that those organizations are losing money. But, you know, and I don't know whether this is just speculation, but I'm certain that those organizations would love to see pornography limited to that you have to use a credit card, because that would then fix the business model for them, so that you wouldn't have all this free stuff that people could watch. You'd have to basically pay for it. So again, there's a, even just within that area of porn, and whether you agree with porn or not, it doesn't matter, okay? Because porn is not illegal, right? So, you know, you can say you don't agree with it, but it's not actually illegal. It's like adultery isn't illegal either. I mean, you know, there are things that some people might not agree with, but in our free society, in according to terms of our society, they are legal. So that's your personal opinion if you don't agree with it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Being free is being is part of the price of being free. I don't think we're that free anyway. But the price of being free is being offended. And that's just part and parcel of living in a free society, is that you are going to be offended, and it's your right to be able to oppose those things and to say, look, it's not right that people have zippers on their pants because it's far too quick to be able to unzip them. I mean, that was one of the things that came out when zippers were first invented, believe it or not. You know, there was a whole big outrage in the hard right Christian movement in America, saying anyone wearing zippers are against God and all that. You know, I mean, you get all sorts of people. I'm drifting off here. But
no, it's a really interesting point. Really, really interesting point. The other thing I wanted to say is that with downloading, I think there is a business model for having a pay for download, which can work as long as it's not too expensive. Because, okay, the free stuff will always be there, but you can't always find it. And it can be sometimes not the quality that you want. You know, sometimes it's indeterminate. You've got to download it and you find out. But if someone sets up a cheap download option that where you can get what you want easily, then there's a business model there. It's just
There's plenty of business models. Yeah. Anyone can see that. I mean, you know, you have bands now, major bands, who have broken away from record labels because they're realizing the record labels are the dinosaurs. There's no point. What are they called? I forgot their name now, but they basically released an album. Radiohead, they released an album.
Right.
After breaking from their record label online for free, and they said, pay for it for what you think it's worth. So you can pay 10 cents if you think it's worth 10 cents, or you can pay 20 bucks if you think it's worth 20 bucks. And they made a killing from that. And it was such a fantastic new breakthrough in a business model. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, they're a big band, they can do that sort of thing. But no, that's bull. I mean, the local band that plays at the pub can also do that. I mean, why not?
Yeah. No, you're spot on there. Spot on. Well, look, I think we're going to wind up.
Folks, visit www.truthnews.com.au. You leave some comments. Also, what's the Skype in line? We're getting some fantastic phone calls, so keep them coming.
Yeah.
You know, whether you disagree, you agree, you've got a point that we think we should add. If you've got a website that you'd like us to promote, ring us up on the Skype number, which is...
okay. As you can see, I'm not organized. It's been in the emails. It goes out in the emails. I should have it at my fingertips, and I don't, but don't worry.
Yeah, also subscribe to our emails on truthnews.com.au. Hit the little subscribe, then you'll get an email when the show comes out. You can easily unsubscribe if you find us annoying.
Dead easy, so easy. It's ridiculous. And the T-shirts are going to be on for sale through our site within the week. We've got a distributor up in Queensland, Numinous Designs. They produce really beautiful underground, you know, anti-New World Order T-shirts, and they've added ours to the set of what they sell. And so that's so exciting. It's really great.
Yeah. Until next week, I'm Joshua Jackson.
And I'm Herewood Fenton. Good night, Josh.
Good night.
Good night, world.